Welcome to the Frontier Banter.
All right, and we're live. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Frontier Banter Podcast. My name is Colonel Derek Baer, the U.S. Army Garrison Fort Sill Commander. And today I'm here with...
Command Sergeant Major Bill Pearson, the Fort Sill Garrison CSN.
All right, and today we have, I don't know what we would call it, the pleasure, the honor, the esteemed privilege, perhaps, to host a really good friend of mine, someone I've known for 50 years solid. And I say that because we are both 50 years old. We're identical twins. My identical twin brother, three-star nominative Command Sergeant Major T.J. Baird. Tom, welcome to the show. If you don't mind, man, please introduce yourself.
Hello, I am T.J. Baird. I have 60 days left in the Army. I'm really looking forward to it. In my next chapter, I'm going to be a trophy husband for my wife, Joanne, and that, for me, is going to be fantastic.
So, for the audience out there, we all know that we use a Frontier Banter to really talk about garrison life and all the things garrison, and then every now and then we branch out to things that can relate to garrison life or leadership, like we did with Miss Oklahoma, Miss Danica Christofferson, and when Sergeant Major Pierce and I riffed on the very first episode. So today we're going to do a wide ranging different topics, some garrison related, some leadership focus. It's going to be really great. So Tom, if you don't mind, I'm really interested in, you've been around the block for quite some time, roughly 32 years in the Army, give or take a few days. And, but you've also spent some time in the MCOM world. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that and what that meant to you.
Actually, it meant quite a bit. I had no idea what Installation Management Command did. All I knew was, just talking with our garrison sergeant major, I thought everything about the garrison was about barracks and motor pools. And as the G357 sergeant major for MCOM, I learned it was all about power projection. How do we reconstitute an army at war? And we're talking about large-scale combat operations. And how do we project that power forward? I learned quite a bit. In fact, I actually wrote an article specifically about MCOM to learn about the job.
Yeah, because it's not easy. I mean, like, you know, Sergeant Major Pearson and I, he's been in the job a little bit longer than I have, almost 18 months. I'm about 10 months into it, give or take. And again, I think we teach officers and NCOs about their job. We don't teach about or their specific MOS or branch. But what we don't teach about is how do you become a mayor of a small city or a deputy mayor, you name it. So, Bill, what are your thoughts? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I like to describe it to people as when I do my welcome briefs is Colonel Baird is the mayor of Fort Sill, and I'm kind of the city manager, if you will. You know, you have the vision. I kind of run the day-to-day operations, and you're concentrating on really 2030, 2040, you know, energy resilience, energy independence. The better buzzword. And again, power projection. I mean, even Fort Sill is a little bit different because, you know, we have TRADOC and ForceCon simultaneously. So we're doing power projection as well as how do we train and do basic training expansion that's going on right now.
Yeah. And it's a different world, right? We're not, although we're artillerymen, you know, Thompson is a MI, military intelligence by trade, working in the Installation Management Command, and at a garrison level is much different than what we've been attuned to for the past, you know, two decades, you know. So it's been pretty fascinating. But so I'm interested for the two of y'all, like, as we look at the garrison life, because, you know, Tom, you brought this up. It's about power projection. It's about reconstituting the force. And then for us, too, it's really all about training because we're in a TRADOC installation. So I'm interested in your thoughts on that because we, you know, Sergeant Major, you brought this up. Sergeant Major Pearson brought this up. Is I have two sergeants majors. So I got to make sure I know who I'm talking to, right? So the audience knows. But, you know, we look at a traditional TRADOC installation like Fire Center of Excellence, Fort Sill. And, oh, by the way, we have two Forces Command units, the 31st Air Defense Artillery Brigade and the 75th, who, you know, they flow out through different mission sets, you know, whether it's overseas or NTC or you name it. So, yeah.
So you actually have the perfect combination out here. So not only was I the MCOM G357 Sergeant Major, the job right after that, I was the TRADOC G357 Sergeant Major. And then as we look at doctrine and policy for the Army, we understand a TRADOC while it was there. And still, then when you look at it, when you listen to Command Sergeant Major Harris, we use the FORCECOM units as our guideposts as we look to change and adjust, evolve, whatever word, buzzword you want to use for training in our doctrine across the Army. And so right here on Fort Sill, when you have a Forces Command unit or units in your training doctrine command unit, which is the Fire Center of Excellence, you can see firsthand what those units are doing. Mm-hmm. And from your position here at the Fire Center of Excellence, is to be able to provide that information back into the greater training doctrine command as a whole, and be able to hopefully, and then I know hope is not a, it's not generally a course of action, to get that information to training and doctrine command faster so you can evolve our processes, our doctrine, our policies much quicker.
Right.
Because you can see it firsthand and without having to be watered down through somebody else through multiple layers. So that firsthand experience with the Forces Command unit here on the post is exceptional.
Yeah, and then you look at a resource-constrained environment right now as we transform our contact, you know, as we look at the next 2 years and how we execute, you know, new POI or program instruction or new training for the Forces Command units or FORCECOM units, you know, so as we new technology, it all becomes a little bit more and a little wonkier when you're at a resource-constrained environment. But I often think that's the obstacle, right? Ryan Holiday, the obstacle is the way. Let that be the obstacle that allows you to transform in a very creative way, whether it's using new technology like AI for processes, whether it's adjusting policy. You know, as we look at, and we can talk about this more too, it's really fascinating is, you know, as we look at drones or our unmanned aerial systems. I think drones is so much easier to say. You know, so for the sake of the podcast, probably just use drones a little bit more. But if you look at some of these different things we're trying to do in our POI and things we're trying to do to train with it. You know, we're looking at FAA policy, Federal Aviation Administration policy, look at all these different policies to get us or in processes to get us to transform rapidly, not just in the TRADOC and FORCECOM units, but in the garrison itself as we look to the garrison of the future. Now, these are all pretty fascinating and interesting things as we try to do this at a fairly rapid pace.
I mean, you know, going back to what we talked about, what you didn't realize as a garrison, you know, kind of what Sergeant Major Barrett said was, you know, when I was coming up, I thought, garrison, that's boss program.
And it is, kind of.
I mean, which are two of the things that we deal with. But you talk about, you know, as we're expanding, you know, basic combat training, and, you know, you're talking, people are worried about POI and how we're changing the adaptive force. I got to worry about, hey, how am I going to find sheets, mattresses, and pillowcases for an additional 600 people. That's stuff I never would have thought I had to think about when I was a battalion CSM or before that. So then you come into the garrison and you're like, oh man, I got to figure out how I'm going to feed an extra 600 people, the contracts that go behind that, you know, the laundry contract that goes behind now, I got to wash an additional 600 sheets, the additional CIF stuff. Now all that stuff comes in and you walk into a garrison CSM, you're like, I wasn't thinking about any of that. Now you got to understand another 3 pages worth of acronyms where people are talking about to figure out what funds are going to pay for all this.
Yeah, what bucket of, what MDEP, what bucket of money, what SAG, you know.
What color of money is going to pay for all this?
Yeah, exactly.
If you're not using something specifically on post and it's something that maybe you're bringing externally, now you have the intergovernmental agreements, service agreements.
Right.
So using that ICSA, how do you bring those services on post? When do you bring them on post? And they'll have to get updated over time.
That's right.
Sometimes rapidly based on the mission flexibility and changes that come with it.
No, I'm with you. You know, and it's fascinating because, you know, we'll get phone calls or emails like, hey, this thing is happening. It's like an emergency for something. I'm like, that is the least of my concerns over this next week or a month, you know. And it sounds like you're being flippant, and it does sometimes sound like that. But there are other emerging requirements or other priorities that, you know, we're here to support, like the senior commander and the mission set for the garrison and, you know, for the senior commander for his for the installation. And, you know, we try not to let things go sideways, but there are sometimes it's like, hey, like, yes, it's a priority for you, but it may not be a priority just yet for us until maybe sometime in the near future.
And then as we spoke at the Heritage Ball on Saturday, it's actually part of the speech that I put out there was people do forget. That's why I do talk about this quite a bit, especially about our installations, is the power projection piece.
Yeah.
From the strategic support area, which is the CONUS base, out to the close and the deep fight. And how do we do that? And then the ever-changing demands on installations based on the ever-changing demands on the equipment and the technologies that we use. When we are moving towards our 6.68 round for our new rifles, that's expansion of a range. That's then how do we look at that, and how do we expand our ranges out into the limited resources? And at this point, now we're talking about land for safety. How do we expand our motor pools to ensure that they can support the new systems that are coming online at the same pace that these systems are coming online? Because we talk a lot about the technologies. This happens quite a bit from either the industry base or in the military, is that we have all these great things we want to do from technology, but a lot of times we forget about the sustainment dollars and sustainment costs and everything that goes behind it to ensure that we can actually use it effectively, our installation, not just have someone there. Now we got to park it somewhere in a big old field where it's actually where we can actually have the space to park it, but not in a natural facility where we really need it for upkeep, maintenance, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So we as leaders have to understand that, hey, everything has to come together at the same timeline as we phase in these new technologies, new pieces of equipment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we look at it, we talk motor pools, we talk gyms, we talk strategic support areas. But then what we often forget is the road, the piping under the road, the electrical infrastructure, the lighting, you know, things that I never really had a true appreciation for until I got to this job. It's like one of those things like, oh, I turn on a light and things happen and there's a light bulb that comes on. But there's lots of things that make that light bulb happen, right? To turn on.
Or even like you just said, you talk about ranges. You're like, hey, we're going to expand your basic trainings by 400 people. All right, well, that's an extra 400 people that are shooting at targetry that we're going to have to replace.
Yeah.
We're going to have to pay a guy to put up that targetry. We're going to have to pay a range control guy to be there to run the range. It's all those things were coming up. Like, hey, I showed up to range, I shot at a target, and I left.
That's right.
You never thought about all the things behind that. Or my up team deployments. I got on a plane, I flew out, and that was it. I didn't realize the amount of civilian work that went behind me getting on that plane and landing somewhere in a foreign country. Yeah. I got on this plane, I got off, and they told me to go that way. So, okay.
And I would hit on what you said, too. I want to actually expand upon and really stop my foot on this one. Through the course of our careers, and I've been in the Army 32 years. When I retire, it'll be 32 years, 9 months, and 22 days. That's what's on my order. So it's been a long time.
Can you get down to the hours and minutes later?
I could try to do that, but I'll just stick with the big stuff right there. That's pretty good.
That'd be awesome.
Right? Through our careers, from the enlisted side, our warrant officers and our officers, we go to the primary military education, and we are taught how to do our jobs. Mm-hmm. And it's different at echelon. Regardless of where you go. And you're right. They do not teach you how to be a mayor. They do not teach you how to be a city manager. And so we often look down, and I'll put this in quotes. I hear this quite a bit. Oh, you're just a garrison commander. Oh, you're just a garrison sergeant. This is TJ Baird's fairly lengthy experience in the military. And having also said the same thing until I got to Installation Management Command and realized, holy cow, the amount of work that goes into running a garrison, from our smallest to our smaller concerns, all the way to some of our largest installations, it is amazing. And people don't realize the amount of work that's on it. And so as we look at future nominative sergeants, major, future general officers, we got to look at this pool of individuals who we have asked them to come out of their comfort zones because, again, we are taught to be brigade sergeants, major. We are taught to be brigade commanders, battalion commanders, tactical and operational level units specifically designed to do that, right? Because that's what our job is, fight one of nation's wars. Mm-hmm. No one teaches you how to be a garrison commander or a garrison sergeant major, and you're thrown into the mix. I used to run and oversee the garrison pre-command course at San Antonio. It was hosting the G7 in one of our facilities, and they do a really good job. But it just touches the surface. It's at an executive level and it's there for a reason. When you get into that position, sometimes it's a year later, so you have to get spun back up again and caught back up because it's just when your timing fits to go to that school. The knowledge you gain as a garrison sergeant major, as a garrison commander, you can always put forth in increasing levels of responsibility and command for officers at the GO flag officer level, and same thing for our command sergeant major at the nominal level. Because if you're a command sergeant major at a nominal level, like in a division, you're a senior mission commander, and even as a 2-star, 1-star, if you're the deputy commanding general, here's the deal. You still have to understand the garrison life. And if you already know that from being in a garrison position, it makes you a more effective leader. And I think we forget about that. We forget about that as an army, as we get more senior, it is about power projection, but how do we project that power forward? Yeah. And everything that entails. If you're a leader and know that, you're a much better postured to affect that projection as we move that power forward.
Yeah, especially if you look at the resources. So it's not only the garrison resources, it's all the other resources, like whether it's installation director for training, whether it's installation management command, whether it's Army Sustainment Command, right, or Army Materiel Command, whether it's, you know, coming from whatever echelon above, you've got to put all that together along with all the different eaches and all the tenant units within the installation and really kind of bring all that together. And that's what I like. You know, we talk about life leader principles, you know, and we'll kind of get to that here in a minute with you, Tom, and is, you know, teamwork is one of mine. Like, how do you pull all these people together and make them work together and like fit all those widgets together at differing echelons, whether it's direct level leadership, organizational, or strategic, putting them and aligning them to the senior commander's in mission and intent and end state. You know, and so it's been a pretty fascinating and interesting ride for the past 10 months. And I really appreciate how you said that as we look at not just what our comfort level is in our branches or MOSs, but where we're expanding our knowledge base, looking at different resources, whether it's material, whether it's personnel or financial. And so that's been a really eye-opening experience for me personally. And I don't know about you, Sergeant Major Pearson, but I mean, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that, if you don't mind.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. And I think, one, it's also different because forming teamwork in the green suitor land is a lot easier because that's what we're trained on coming up. So now they're saying, hey, you're going from that to what do we have now? I think we have roughly right now 23 green suitors on us. Actually, probably 25.
Yeah.
But now you have to get teamwork involved in hundreds of civilians. Some of may have never served in the military at all. So now we have to completely shift the way we lead, which goes back to what Sergeant Major Bear was saying, is what makes us more marketable is now we have learned the hard way of how to lead in completely different facets. So now we can lead across a much broader spectrum of an organization. And I think what's important for us, which is making us very successful too, is I think one, we are good at building a team. And two, we are also present. I've always said this, there's a difference between being present and having presence. Hmm. And you and I feel have great presence across the garrison. I mean, there is no one on this installation and say, hey, I haven't seen those guys in a while. Hmm. We are everywhere all the time. And we do a great job of getting out of the office and making sure we were like, hey, instead of having a meeting here, I'll come to you. And we know which areas we're going to attack. But again, building a team and having presence, I think, is the two key elements of leading a garrison.
Yeah, that goes, I guess, at all echelons, right? Like I remember someone told me that when I was a young lieutenant, you know, leaders with the lead. Right? Like go out and be present and have presence. You learn that over time, right? Like, it's not often, some people it's innate and inherent in what they do, but oftentimes it's stuff that you have to grow into and just actually do it. I'm with you. I'm a big fan of it. If I'm doing a monthly meeting with a director or a biweekly meeting, I'd rather just go one. I want to be out of my office because it gets me out. Right. We talked about that with someone today as we looked at like, how do we create white space? How do we create efficiencies? And by that, I mean like time efficiencies. And are we actually doing the things that we're supposed to be doing? Or what was the thing we heard today was the Microsoft Outlook calendar kill chain. Microsoft Outlook kill chain. That is one of now my new favorite thing, right? The Microsoft Office kill chain.
It's the button I created.
That is the button you created. I think that was absolutely brilliant because it's there. It's true, right? Like we're using these, and I love systems and processes, as you know, but sometimes they will control your life if you don't reach out and control it, right? And I think you're right, like getting out there to do these things are really important. Tom, I think you had something to say.
So the presence piece, that's really huge. People ask me a lot about work-life balance. And I tell them, the word balance and work-life balance, it's a myth. There is no balance. It denotes a 50-50. Mm-hmm. It can never be that way. Some years ago, someone said, hey, you know, work-life harmony.
I like
how
that.
You harmonize your life. And then through that, then I get into presence. Where are you? Where is your focus at work? Are you focused on the job or are you doing something else? Or when you're at home, are you focused on your family, which really needs your focus at this point? Because as soldiers, we do get out, we train a lot, TDYs a lot, deployments, especially during the height of the global war on terror. Is when we're at home, are we focused on the family, present with our family, or is our mind still at work on other things from what we just did and what we are going to do? And so that was my discussion with the NCO Academy, the Non-Commissioned Officer Academy, yesterday when someone asked that question, hey, how do you and your wife, who's also a nominative sergeant major at a 3-star command, how do you, and he asked me, how do you balance? I said, we don't balance anything. We harmonize what we do. Yeah. And sometimes it's only a minute or two conversation or maybe less, depending on where we're going. And we know that, we understand that through just repeated communication on how we interact with each other. And so regardless of where we are from the installations to our forward positions is, how do we harmonize what we're doing in our lives, personally and professionally?
You know, you and I talk about this a lot, Tom, is managing energy, right? We talk about it a lot, but I just think people don't really know what it means. Like, we manage your energy, you know? And so what does that look like for people? Like, how are you focusing your energy on the job at hand, your family, your friends, the moment, the present, the future, whatever that looks like? You know, we talk about this today at a town hall, is control what you can control, right? And it's good to look up and out to see and learn and do these things, but control, like, there are things that are in the stratosphere that you can't control. You may learn from it. You may glean some information. You may help you out, but you're probably not going to be able to control that. And I say that because what I found is, you know, you've got folks that the first thing they do when they wake up, let's say you wake up at 100% energy because you had a good night's sleep. And the first thing they do is they get on their phone because there's text messages, whatever, or they want to get on Twitter. They see something and, oh my God, whether they just get energetic on the old social media, whatever that is, right? And now that's like the first half hour of their life when they wake up. So now that energy drain starts to happen. So by the time they get to work, maybe 2 or 3 hours later or an hour later, whatever it is when you wake up, now you're down to 70%, right? Well, ideally you should be at 90% maybe, or even 95%, because you spent some time like getting up in the morning, maybe working out, maybe eating some breakfast, whatever it is. So now you have an energy drain and that just continues throughout the day. And then now when you're actually trying to focus on work, your energy is somewhere else and it's not really focused on the thing it should be focused on. And then backtracking that, how do you get that energy back? How do you manage that? Whether you're an introvert, extrovert, whatever that looks like, what does that look like? You know, and so how do you manage, you know, your energy?
You know, and I think that was, and we talk about this all the time, being a good command team does that too. And the problem that you and I have is we're kind of the same person. We're problem attackers.
Yeah.
Sometimes you hear me say this all the time, sir, I got that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you see something that's minute that, you know, other people, hey, Jared, we got this problem at the gate, or hey, this is a problem at the house. So I got the day-to-day stuff. You think about 5 years from now.
Yeah.
I'll worry about this soldier X decided to, you know, destroy a floor plan in his house, or what happened the other day, where he's running a tattoo parlor out of his garage. So I'll handle that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You concentrate on that. And that comes with managing your energy. That comes with enabling your team to handle all those things so you can manage your energy a lot better.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm with you because it's, you know, where are we focusing our effort? And sometimes you got to come down, sometimes you go back out, and we work through that as we go. And I do appreciate that.
Managing energy as we go back and forth in the communication space is fantastic. I will also say is I had a battalion commander. He and I were very energetic. and you can outpace and push your organization faster than it can handle. And we were constantly reminded from our higher headquarters, hey, you all are doing great. We understand what you want to do. You've got to pace it better because you're outpacing, the two of you are outpacing your organization. But you bring a lot of positive energy, which is good. So people aren't really like pushing back too much because it's kind of a feel good opportunities.
Yeah.
But then when you step back and realize, okay, let's sequence this better. Let's actually follow the roadmap that we created through our team, say, okay, and then get back onto that roadmap and just know that there is a thing for tactical operation strategic patience. And we have to execute that to ensure that that energy, like you were talking about, the daily energy, now we're talking energy that's going to last months and potentially years mm-hmm. to get to these long-term projects because you don't want to burn your team out too soon. And then on the flip side of that is you also need to make sure you have the energy to push your organization forward. Because what I see a lot of leaders is they have these great ideas, but they don't have the energy or don't want to use their own personal and professional energy to move that idea forward. And that's where you can kind of, you'll get stuck in your vision and what you want to do to move your organization forward.
Yeah. I like what you said about pacing, you know, as you pace, right? Like, because sometimes you want to be a little bit more command or pace setting. You really want to get after. We're just going to wait, or we're going to, you know, people try to wait you out. I always tell people, hey, it's okay to be impatient sometimes, right? But then sometimes you got to take a step back and then, you know, take a breath and like just let things start happening because you've given guidance, you've executed a couple of things. Now you just got to see that process play out. But then you also got to know when people are slow rolling you too.
Yeah. So it's all about the harmonizer. It goes back to how do we harmonize in the professional workspace? And we're talking about the professional workspace, not on the personal side of the house. How do you harmonize everything to move things forward? And there's going to be a give and take on what we're trying to do to ensure that the team is moving in the direction that we needed to move in. Because there is a give and take in that. That's why we talk about the harmony piece of it when it comes to presence and everything else, not the balance.
Yeah.
Because that's going back and forth. Harmonizing is multiple inputs and outputs. And that, you know, stepping on the gas here, putting the pump on the brakes here, maybe doing a little bit of both at the same time on multiple different objectives. So it is how do we harmonize everything? That's why we talk a lot about harmony instead of balance.
Yeah.
You know, and it goes to you talk about people waiting you out and some of the other issues you had. That goes back to learning how to work with the civilian workforce to get to and building that team. Now, I said it on one of our earlier podcasts. Now, when I say this, I mean it happens in onesies and twosies. So when I say this, I don't want the audience to think this happens a lot with me. But on the sergeant major side of the house, when you're in garrison, sometimes you're working with a civilian who may be a retired lieutenant colonel or major or even full brigade colonel that may not necessarily like that a sergeant major is telling them, hey, I really need you to accomplish X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, sergeant major, I'm a retired colonel. That's wonderful. Now you work here and I'm telling you, I need you to do this, this, and this. That's only really happened, I would say twice since I've been at Garrison CSM. And that goes into your leadership style as coming over to Garrison. You got to learn how to switch up your leadership style because it's definitely not the same as when you're working just, it's easy for me to tell a staff sergeant, hey, you're going to go do this. I have very few ways I need to say that, whereas you got to change that up when you're on the garrison side.
That's so true.
And again, it goes back to being a garrison commander, a garrison command sergeant major, you have to learn another language. The lexicon, the vernacular, whatever you want to say, is different when we speak on our military teammates than we do with our civilian teammates, especially for those who have never been either around the military, been part of the military, whatever. I experienced this on multiple occasions, especially my last few jobs that were civilian heavy, is how do I communicate effectively? Now, when I say communicate effectively, you still talk professionally, you're supposed to speak professionally with everybody, but instead of using military jargon, you have to translate that into a civilian lexicon because people may not know, hey, I went out rock marching. Well, what does that mean? I went out and I did X, Y, Z. Okay, what does that mean? So then you have to put it in civilian parlance. it's not that hard. You just have to know how to do it and when to shift it over and say, hey, I'm doing this. This is what it means for the audience that doesn't understand it. This is what it means. Or you ask right up front, who was comfortable with military jargon and vernacular? Or do I need to automatically translate that? And that is okay because it gets the audience involved and they know that, hey, this person actually cares about the audience when we're speaking with them or speaking to them. And so, again, it goes into a what you're doing now is vastly different than what we are taught traditionally to be commanders and command sergeants and major in the Army.
Out of all that, I got to say, I like how you just threw in the word parlance. I don't know if anybody else heard that, but I thought that was brilliant. It's kind of funny.
One of them fancy
words over there on them charters. They teach you that there in the old Sergeant Major Academy.
Because I'm an author.
I like thesaurus.
There's no behooving coming out of him.
No, but laboring and all the other things that Sergeant Majors say. It's really great. No, I love it. Also used a couple of things like jargon and vernacular and lexicon. So well, hopefully everybody out there just like marks out how many really great words he uses.
And got buzzword bingo.
I hope we do. Like we said, transformation and contact already. We got to do some more buzzword bingo.
Right.
And so I'm interested, like for y'all, like, you know, Tom, we talked about this earlier, is, you know, we were out for a walk today with my lovely dog, Joker. He was, just loves to go for a walk. But we were talking today about what are the, we sit down, we've all, like you talked to the NCO Academy, you know, Sergeant Major and I have talked, and we've all talked with a bunch of different folks over time. I think since I've been here in the past year and a half, you know, because I was assistant FA Commandant first for a year, then here for about 10 months. I've got to tell you, over the past 2 years, I've had two of my, what I would consider the best questions anybody's ever asked me. One is for someone who's working on their PhD. That was just the other night at the Heritage Ball. But even before that was a private who had been in the Army for 6 months and just been on the winning team that won the first 777 best section for the Best Buy test. So I thought this was great. So two questions. I'm going to ask both at the same time, but then we'll just go one at a time. The first one I liked from this young private was, how do you take a hit and keep on going? Because he's like, hey, sir, how long have you been in the Army? I'm like, about 27 years at the time, so now 28. And I thought that the really cool thing was he asked that question. I was like, dude, that's like the best question I've ever had, ever. And then the second question I had this past weekend was, how many people do you think you've influenced in your 28 years? I was like, I'm not sure. I'd have to go and count, and that's more than my fingers and toes will allow.
Bill, if you let me do the first one, would you like to do the second one?
Yeah, go ahead. You go first.
Okay.
Bill's like,
by all means, go first.
I got to count. I got more toes and fingers to get through.
So I'll take the first question. How do you take a hit? I've been to a lot of Army schools, and I failed one of them, and that was the Army's Air Assault School, where we learned how to attach equipment underneath the helicopter, move across the battle space. You learn how to rappel. You learn how to air assault. It's a three-week course. And on the week two, I knew that I was going to be a week three. Excuse me. I knew that I was going to be the honor grad. I got the highest grades, passed everything, did this, that. We're on the rappelling tower, right? Night rappel, and I did a fatal log. And I knew it. I knew I even had time to correct it. I didn't think the black hat or black shirt saw it, right? And he showed me the time, and I was like, no, I'm good. And so I failed. It was an automatic failure. You get no retest. So I did a walk of shame down. And it was a huge ego hit. And so I went home, had a little pity party for a couple of days. And then I came to realize, as I was actually out on a run at the time, going, okay, it's okay to have an ego and ambition to drive yourself forward and meet your personal and professional goals. That's actually what we need as leaders.
Yeah.
But what happens is when you get more into the hubris piece of it, when you become egotistical or ambitious to the point where there's a lot of self-denial, you're not listening to anybody, you're not really paying attention. It's really that self-denial is a huge one. And you fail. And you hit a huge bump in the road. And I recognize that. And again, it was through a lot of self-reflection. So fortunately, my next class I went through was a jump master school, and that's about a 35% pass rate. And I decided to say, okay, I'm going to take my lesson learned, which is a pretty big lesson learned. I'm going to go to jump master school, and I'm going to do everything in my power to get through it the first time. And I did. And it was because I remembered, do not let your ego get ahead of you. use it to power you through, but recognize when you start stepping into the hubris side of the house and understand what humility really is and how it can help you move through personal, professional goals, objectives, whatever it is. And so from there, and then I went back to Aristotle School, passed the class in a way I went. And I use this specifically because this was over 25 years ago. And then when I competed for the Sergeant Major of the Army at the same time that Sergeant Major of the Army Mike Wire did, someone asked me about, hey, what happens when you take a hit? Now, the question was worded differently, but I used this as an example because it resonated from 25 years ago. And it's a great learning point for me now as I get into that. It happens to everybody, and no one is infallible, and least of all me. We do it to a point where egos get too large. And then if I go back and I just say, hey, remember the tower, which is the repelling tower for me, that puts me, kind of, I wouldn't say back in a box, but it reminds me, hey, calm down a little bit, pull back a little bit, and then think about what is going on, and then re-engage again with a little bit more humility, a little bit more focus, and get through what I need to get through personally and professionally. So when it comes to that, like how do you take a hit and keep going? That was a big one because I was pretty down on myself. And then as I got through Jump Master School, it was a big win for me. And then I had to take that win into Aerosol School, but not to the point where I did last time and failed because of my ego. I just said, okay, look, I did that. It's great. It validated what I had learned about myself. And then I took it into that Aerosol School and was able to pass and continue on my career. So I was very excited about that. Again, it resonates with me, and it's huge, huge for me today.
Yeah, because, you know, we talk about this often, Tom, is failing forward, right? And learning from those experiences, getting the feedback, internalizing it, learning that lesson, and then figuring out a process to get through it. You know, I'm a big fan of, you know, we talk about this all the time about life leader principles. And my number one thing is purpose. Like, you got to drive towards your purpose. And that's kind of what you're talking about. So I want to continue to serve. I look at family as part of that. Like, those are my two things I call purpose, like service and family. And we've all been like, whether you didn't get the job, you didn't get the promotion, you didn't get this, you didn't pass a class, maybe you failed a PT test along the way. Whatever the thing is that didn't happen, you know, I always look at what's my purpose in life and how do I reinitiate my mindset to get through that failure or the thing that I wasn't able to accomplish in the way I wanted to accomplish it. Right. And so one of the things I look at is like, what's my purpose in life and what it goes back to family and service. So, you know, continue to serve whatever that capacity is, whether it's in the DOD, Department of Defense, you know, the Army, whether it's whatever you're doing in your, you know, you could be, I don't know, a manager somewhere or a CEO,
in the private industry,
whatever that looks like. And then family, like, who is it that can rally around you that you can really hold on to? Whether it's family, friends. Oh, wow. That's, yes, it's the
retreat.
It's the retreat going on. I love it. You know, so it's really helpful when you look at some of these things. So having purpose is helpful, and then having ways to like get you through that trying time is helpful, kind of like what you said.
It's life's about taking L's. And you know, as much as I'm not a Chicago Bears fan, it goes back to the great Mike Ditka quote, you're not a loser till you quit trying.
That's a great one.
I don't know if I want to quote him because he's still serving in a very high role, but a senior leader said it in a forum I was in. I think he was right, where the military kind of got resiliency wrong, because nowadays we try to build resilient soldiers. We think that's putting people in a bubble and make sure they don't feel anything, where building resiliency is going through stuff. You have to allow people to go through life and take L's, take hits, go through some hardship. Mm-hmm. That's building resiliency. So taking a hit and keep going, that's just part of life. That's not even a soldier thing. That's just life. You're gonna take L's. Nobody just skates through life and everything is perfect and they live in this magical bubble and just go through everything. So taking hits, knowing that you're gonna take a hit and knowing that it's how you get up and keep going. Again, Mike Ditka, realign. Yeah. You never lose until you quit trying.
Yeah.
Now on to the second question. How many people do I think I've influenced?
That's a hard question to answer.
I think it's unknowable. Here's why. We like to think we influence hundreds. And maybe by the time we get to our level, and definitely Sergeant Major Bayer's level, maybe we have. Because your sphere of influence goes much broader, and you're dealing with larger formations. an influence. That doesn't necessarily mean we influence them good or bad, right? Now you stay in contact with people who say you, who may call you their mentor, and you still give them advice. So it's easy to count on your hands how many people you've influenced. But I think it's truly unknowable. I mean, there's leaders I had as a private that were battalion sergeant majors or battalion or brigade commander that influenced me that don't even know it. Mm-hmm. And they never would.
Yeah.
So I think it's an unknowable question, to be honest with you.
So we talked about that today. There's a direct influence. Like you just said, directly influence you by personally interacting, right, wrong, or different, good, bad, or ugly, whatever that looks like, because everybody has a different perspective and view and filter on life. And then there's the indirect influence, like this podcast, like you and I on KSWO, like, you know, going out on a podcast or an interview, or just being present and people see you doing things. You may not even know you affect them.
Sometimes your presence in a room may have influenced someone that we will never know.
Or
go back into mental health. Sometimes you and I stop and talk to people and generally want to know how their day was.
Mm-hmm.
We could have influenced them just on that, and we will never have known that we did.
And you hear stories about that all the time, right? Like, hey, so-and-so talked to me, and maybe it was really down, but just that little interaction. You know, or again, like all the things that we talk about, you know, just, you know, all the influence, you know, I'm an influencer, right? You know, are we? I don't know. It's really interesting to see, like, how it was a fascinating question. Like, how many of you, I don't know. That's a great question. Thousands, hundreds, one? I don't know.
I want to, you talk about the influencing piece, but before that, we talked about when everybody has a hard road, we talk about resiliency. Mm-hmm. There are always going to be obstacles, all these twists and turns.
Yeah.
And a few weeks ago, I was on a bike ride. I was training for my 50-mile race. And
which, if I don't mind interrupting, you won overall 50-mile race, 3 hours and 13 minutes. That's also a training, a flat tire.
Yes.
So congratulations.
I appreciate it. It was a local race. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, to be humble and whatnot, you won.
It was still a local race. Yes, it was
the winner, chicken dinner.
Right, it was a lot of fun. but I was on Fort Bragg. And I was going up Long Street, going out towards the gate. And I took a picture of it. And as I said, this is a pretty long hill. If you've ever been on Long Street, you'll know the hill that I'm talking about or the road that I'm talking about. And then I kicked off on another road. It was nice and twisty. It has a couple of turns and everything. And then I got on Ardennes. It's relatively flat. And as I was thinking about this, oh, this is a very interesting life principle or life lesson is, we always talk about the hard, the harder, and the hardest roads. And as I'm riding, I'm thinking to myself, what road is the hard road, the harder road, and the hardest road? And as I went through all of this, and I look at it from a leader's perspective, is what is going to make me better? Which road is going to make me better? The hilly road, the slightly curvy road, or the straight road that's relatively flat with no obstacles on it? And as I went through that, and again, this is because you triggered this story, is the hard road, the flat road, for leaders, that's why that is the hardest road to go on, because there are no obstacles. There's nothing to challenge you. There's nothing to make you think critically. There's nothing to allow you to grow as a leader. So we think about the straight and narrow. Oh, it's easy. It's great. And as a bicyclist, I was flying right down it.
Yeah.
But as a leader, I don't learn anything from it. All I know is I'm just doing really well. Great. Then I went on this really hilly road, which is Long Street. And I'm going up this road. And it's a fairly steep for Fort Bragg. And I'm going up and I'm like, wow, this is very difficult. And how do I manage getting up this hill with my energy and everything else? And how do I deal with all the cars around me and everything else?
Yeah.
And so that is the hardest road. We're going up a hill. It's up and down. It's moving. There are some twists and turns in it. On some of these roads, some of these hills. So that hardest, that road is the harder road, right? It's the hard road. You learn more out of that road than anything else. And then when you get to the twisty, curvy road, you still learn, but it's not as great. And so when people say, oh, the straight and narrow makes things easier for you, it does. But as a leader, that is the hardest road to travel because it doesn't allow you to grow.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we talk resiliency a lot. I think all three of us, whether together, whether, you know, in pairs or, you know, World of Tanks, you know, online, we're doing, you know, it's kind of fun. But, you know, we talk about how do you take a hit? Now, and I'll use a couple of examples, but one, like a physical example is, you know, I just did this past September, October, when I did the OKC triathlon.
I say it was September.
Yeah. And going around the second loop, if you will, on the bike, a lot more sand and dirt on the road, took a spill on the bike, didn't realize the time it broke my collarbone. Yeah, I could have just given up right there. But you talk about health and holistic fitness. And I think, you know, and Tom, one of your life leader principles I love is be fit, mind, body, spirit. So that's very similar to like health and holistic fitness, or I want to say
health and holistic fitness.
Yeah, or holistic health and fitness, or whatever. Doesn't matter. Y'all know what we're talking about. And so you look at the stool, the three legs there, you know, physical fitness, mental fitness, and spiritual fitness all leads to resiliency. And I got to tell you, coming on that bike, slapping the chain back on and leaning forward and like putting pressure, I was like, huh, it's a little sore. So I thought maybe, you know, tore something or maybe just a little bone bruise. But after I finished the race, and then I realized I was supposed to go out to breakfast that morning with Command Sergeant Major Pearson and his wife, and we were going to go out there to OKC, and then I couldn't put my shirt back on over my head and had to get some help from Sergeant Major Pearson. He's like, I'm like, oh, I'm ready to go for breakfast. He's like, you probably need to go to the hospital. And I did, and found out I had a broken collarbone. Nice, clean snap, no movement, so it was very, very not easy, but the road to recovery was a little quicker, was thankful, no surgery. But I still had to say this, the resiliency part, like getting back up, I knew I had to get back up. Physically, I knew I could do it. I had to slow down a little bit on the run. It hurt, but I finished it. So grit, right? Like getting back after it. You know, that is, you look at like the long road back and then taking the time, like both y'all said it and other folks say it, because we are all soldier athletes. We just want to continue to get after it. But then you got to realize, am I putting energy in the right place to like get back in the gym and do these things, or should I let myself heal so I can get back in the gym without getting hurt? And so taking that hit in a physical sense is also a way we got to take a look at, like how we look at spiritual and mental resilience, and putting all those together will help us out in the long run. And that was you know, what you said about the road, you know, and understand what that looks like. Cause oftentimes the easiest path is not always the best path, cause you don't really learn from it. You know, and Sergeant Major Pearson also said it, hey man, you got to get the L's. You got to fail forward. Otherwise you don't learn anything.
I mean, ironically, we've all dealt with it recently. I went to do that. Was it 50? No, 100K. I was running 100K. I broke my foot.
Yeah.
Right around mile 16, I think it was, when I called you.
20.
And I was, it was mile 20. And I was like, hey, I just broke my foot. I'm in the middle of the woods. So I got to limp my way to mile 26.
I think when you called, I started laughing, actually. I was like, ha ha. And I felt bad for
it. Like
for 2 seconds, I felt bad.
I mean, I did laugh putting your shirt on for you. So.
Also very true.
It's just how Army people, just how Army people are.
It was.
As you should.
As you should. I would expect nothing
it's,
less.
You know, as you are, when you're around good friends and you fall down, they're there to help you out with your hand, giggling the whole time, pulling you back
right.
up.
That's right.
Right. That's what good friends do.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's important as we look at like what it means for resiliency, because, you know, we see it here often with young recruits or young soldiers getting young civilians ready to be soldiers, and young soldiers in the recruits or in AIT, and even old fuddy-duddies like us, you know, how do you brace for impact and continue on? And it's important, right? Especially in a job like this, where you're not, when I say job, like in the garrison, where you're not really sure what you're doing, especially the first month or three.
Oh, for sure.
Heck, sometimes I feel like after 10 months, I'm not really sure what I'm doing. Not really true, but I mean, in some regards, like, oh, this is kind of a surprise. Like, oftentimes I tell you, I'm not really surprised anymore, but man, not really true.
My first meeting as the G3 Sergeant Major in Installation Management Command, we were talking about ISR, and everybody's around the table, ISR this, ISR that, and I am an intelligence professional, and I have done a lot of things across the world using ISR, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance. And so we're in this room, and I know this is not what they're talking about. I know this because of the context, but I didn't know what the acronym meant. And so I raised my hand, kind of like, hey, I have a question. I don't know what ISR means in this context, because I believe what I think it means based on my background is XYZ.
Right.
Like, oh no, Sergeant Major, it's intelligence. Installation status report. I was like, ah, two different ISRs.
That makes way more sense.
Right. So we talked about
now it's in context.
Right. So when you talk about learning, and it's a continual learning, we talk about the education continuum all the time in the Army, and it is a learning experience. Again, so I go back to being a garrison sergeant major, being a garrison commander, you are learning more than any other command team out there because we grew up getting prepared to be a brigade commander, battalion commander, command sergeant major for tactical and operational units. No one prepares you to be a garrison sergeant major. No one prepares you to be a garrison commander. No one prepares you for the amount of interaction you have, not only with everything that has to do with an installation from our smallest to our largest, but then to the surrounding communities, what their partners, and how do you engage with them to ensure that you have a great relationship with everybody inside the installation and everybody outside the installation. And if you don't, and most people, and I would say the vast majority, have no idea what that really entails, unless you are actually somewhere inside of installation management command.
Yeah.
If from my perspective, at the policy level to where you all at the point of impact, because for me, it was all policy and procedures for this very large organization that we call MCOM. And then we shove all that down to you all, and then we get all the feedback coming back from you, from the teams. But your growth, it will always continue. You're always learning every day because this is something that we are not taught to do.
Yeah, no, but it's good though, because lifelong learners, right? As we all are, it's certainly beneficial. Again, it's not the straight and narrow; it's the windy, hilly path that we're on that you continually learn and fail forward. But people pick you up, you pick yourself up, dust off, and just keep going and learn from your mistakes. So, hey Tom, I'm interested, and if you want to talk about it, we can. But so you're about ready to retire here in about 60 days. During your transitional window, I know you and I are writing a leadership book. We've been doing it for some time as we look at putting all these together. But you're also doing something a little different. Some of the haikus, some odes, putting a little coffee book with old Cool Bear. So if you want to talk a little bit about that and why you're doing it.
Yeah, that's great. My daughter, before my last deployment, got me this little bear, a little beanie baby bear. And I affectionately named him Cool Bear. And Cool Bear went everywhere with me on my last deployment in Afghanistan.
And he's a camouflage bear. And he's an army bear.
He is an army bear, definitely in the camouflage pattern. And he is he has been on some missions. Was amazing. He was my buddy's an F-16 pilot, so he was up in the cockpit with him on some gun runs and everything else we were doing at the time. So that was pretty impressive. And then as I'm going through the transition period now, and just like a lot of our veterans, and just not just our veterans, but a lot of folks that are away from their families due to work, is my relationship with my daughter has not been the greatest. It's been rocky at times. And then how do I tell my daughter how much she means to me, has meant to me over the years? And like I said, you and I like to write.
Mm-hmm.
So with Cool Bear, I wrote a series of haikus and odes, not only about my last deployment, but I've deployed, I have 9 combat deployments and 20 some odd plus National Command Authority missions. And so I'll put this in quote, inserted Cool Bear in my bearing other missions, just because I always thought about my daughter when I'm on these missions and she brought me home. Like thinking of her going through all these very dangerous events, is I had to make sure I was trained effectively, prepared effectively to be lethal and survive on the battlefield, and so that I could come home to be with my daughter. And so I wrote these odes and haikus, and right now it's going through illustration design. We're going to the finals right now, and then from there I'll pick an illustrator and we're going to bring this to fruition and get it published. And secondly, I've got another book that's in design. It's already designed, ready to go. I'm just going to wait to get this one through published process so I can learn and maybe make the second one a little bit easier. And this is actually specifically for my daughter. Now there may be a couple mentions of Cool Bear in there, but this is actually a warrior dad to his daughter. It's a for me to show my daughter the love that she gave for me that I always felt when I was forward. And everything I did was for her so I could come home, to make sure that when I come home, the way everything that we did forward, where we were around the world, is she has a place here in the United States as a country, as a safe place to live. And she, because I it was hard for me to tell just because in the organization I was in at the time, it was vastly what I did most of my operations in. I really can't talk about it, what we did.
Yeah.
And so through the stories, which are very vanilla, and be able to show her and tell her and thank her and let her know how much she meant to me when I was out there doing our nation's business.
Stuff.
Yeah, our nation's business.
Yeah. No, it's really great. You know, and Cool Bear has done a lot of stuff.
Cool Bear has done quite a bit. He's been on a couple of jumps. He's awesome.
But an F-16, I mean, not a whole lot of people have been in an F-16, but Cool Bear has been in an F-16, doing some cool stuff.
He did do some cool stuff.
You take a picture of Cool Bear, he's got a black bar across his eyes. Oh, like, you don't know me, but I know you.
And actually, so Cool Bear sits on my dashboard in my Jeep.
Yeah.
And he goes with me. And then when I'm traveling, I generally take him with me, especially obviously the road trips.
Yeah.
And then if it's a long-term trip, he comes with me because Cool Bear gets a lot of pictures.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, Cool Bear's been around the block. So, all right. I think that's about it for today. And I want to say thanks to Command Sergeant Major Thomas James Baird, old TJ. I call him Tom. T Jazzle, Wonder Twin. My favorite is T Jackass, but I'm his brother. I could say that.
Wow.
That's out loud. Now it is in the virtual space. Now it's out there. And so, you know, it's really great hosting my identical twin brother on here today. And of course, being here with Sergeant Major Pearson, if you want to have a couple final words.
Yeah, he just calls me the goat.
You also had a goat in your backyard for April Fools.
I did recently have a goat in my backyard for April Fools. That was interesting. Weirdly, I thought my smallest dog, who's a Chihuahua mix, would be afraid, but she just lawn darted right into the goat to exert her dominance. I've taught her well.
She's a true fur missile.
She is. But yeah, it was a great talk. It's always good to get 32 years of leadership experience added onto the show. And again, like we end our shows and our health and holistic fitness challenges, we are America's home.
We are, and I really appreciate everybody out there. Join us next month. We're going to have our DPTMS, so our range ops, our training management folks, mobilization folks, all those folks that synchronize the garrison operations that also support the Fire Center of Excellence and everything on this installation. So we're going to have them on with old Glenn Waters and a couple other folks, another person who's super energetic and a former garrison commander here at lovely Fort Sill with Glenn Waters and his team. So thanks y'all very much. We'll see you on the high ground.